This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. I am honored that you're with me today for this 1 hour. Both Justin and I try to make it worth your while. We really do. And whether you're a radio listener or you hear us streaming online or you go anywhere with your, with your podcasting and time you want to listen to it, we do appreciate you being with us for the hour. Now, is the majority of your retirement portfolio in mutual funds? Most mutual funds have a hard time beating the S&P 500. Now, let me give you an example. Over the last 5 years, 65% of mutual funds failed to beat the market. Now, to be fair, many are not even intended to compete with the S&P 500. This is one of the fallacies we have out there when people talk about, well, mutual funds don't beat the market, or managed accounts don't beat the market. Well, but maybe they're not designed to beat the market. That's not what their purpose was. You can't have a mutual fund buying bonds beating the market, or having a mix of bonds and stocks beating the market. It can't. That's not designed to do that. So you got to be fair in when you characterize it. Now, so just be aware of that when people start talking about that. It's just very difficult because it depends on if they're trying to beat the market. Okay? So beat the market in 1 year is much different than consistently beating the market over many years. Many mutual funds beat the market in a year or two and then lag severely behind, because think about what they're doing. Many mutual funds take extra risk to get the high performance in a year or two so they can attract more money. And then once they start attracting more money, they don't perform as well because they attract too much money. They can't put it to work. They can't do the same thing they did before. There's all kinds of reasons. That's why you got to look at individual mutual funds, look at their managers, look at their long-term record. That would be much a smarter way to buy one. Just remember that. So also, mutual funds have trouble beating the market because the market has no fees. Mutual funds have to charge you a fee somewhere. So it's like a money manager, broker, dealer. Everybody has to charge you a fee, and that fee eats into your returns. It's very, very difficult. Anyways, I just want to bring that up this 1 hour. Now, of course, I'm not saying to never invest in mutual funds. I just want you to be aware of the different categorizations. Be aware of the fees, the performance, so whether they're tracking a particular index or not. So you got to do a little bit of homework. And you can do that on Morningstar.com. They're very good, providing some free data. They also provide data you have to pay for, and that's also very good data, but it can get expensive. Okay, so be aware of that. So how do you shop for mutual funds that fit your profile? Give me a call and we'll talk about it. You can talk to us live 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk, or in between times, just leave your question. And here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi there, my name is Ben. I'm from Biloxi, Mississippi. I listen to you on the podcast. My question was about the Roku. I heard a news today that they were entertaining going public. Anything they do, because they're valued under $1 billion, I believe they said, is they can do it in private. But my question is, if I like Roku for myself. I have a Roku, and I like it so much I don't have cable anymore. My question is, if they did go public, what could they do to grow as a company? I'm sure that there's thousands of answers, but I can't figure out in my mind exactly what could Roku do as a company to grow the stock price. All right, thanks.
Okay, just remember that all stock prices relate to earnings, the ability to make money and grow their money. If they cannot produce earnings, eventually that stock will go away. You have to have earnings at some point. And that doesn't mean you have to have earnings when you first come out public. That doesn't mean a company can't have years of no earnings and still the price of stock goes up. That happens, especially if it's a really good story, quote-unquote story. Think about the dot-com era. Think about all those dot-com stocks that ran up hugely and had no prospects of ever making money. And I remember back then when we were on the radio and we were saying, this company does not make any money, so it's not a real company, and I wouldn't buy it. And people were so mad at me because, me and Jerry at that time, because we were telling them we wouldn't buy that company. It doesn't make any money. It's not a real company until it makes money, and it doesn't have any prospects of making money. And you know how many dot-coms went out of business? So for Roku, which is R-O-K-U is how you guys should spell it, do they make money? And if they don't, how are they going to make money? That was your question. How are they going to make money? They have to do it through subscription. People pay for the service on a monthly basis. Advertisement. People advertise on the system. That's really the only way. The subscription, people pay for the service and advertise. Only two major ways that they can make money. That's it. So, are they going to be, if it's free and there's no subscription, then that means they have to attract enough eyeballs to watch it to sell commercials, basically. They can't do that. I wouldn't touch this thing with a 10-foot pole. Now, also, remember my rule. Don't buy IPOs. You'll never get them at the IPO price. You're not going to get it there. The only time you get it at the IPO price is when no one else wants it. No institutions want it. They're making calls to the individual brokers trying to get them to buy it because they can't sell it because it's not a very good IPO. All the good IPOs, you'll never get at the IPO price. They already sold out before they come to you. So stay away from the IPO market in general. Okay? Diversifying assets by taxability can be an important part of building a successful financial plan. Planning for retirement with tax diversification. How to do that? We're going to discuss and explore that a little bit. That's one of our main talking points today. I also want to talk, there was a little article in the Financial Times this morning about China consumption data hides sharp slowdown, says analysts. Now, China's reporting data that doesn't seem to match up with, we'll talk about that. QE was done. QE is gone. It's going to be done as of the 1st. No more Federal Reserve buying QE. So now what? What's going to happen? Dividend stocks with fast earnings growth. I've got four of them that I think I'm not recommending to buy or sell them, but this is an article about super fast growing stocks, big, pretty safe, blue chippy stocks with good dividends. So I thought I'd mention them to you, pass along the names so you can do some research and to see what you think. And why the market will rally to the end of the year. Now, I'm not saying it's going to, but I've gotten four reasons why it could rally to the end of the year. Now, I was reading in this very same paper, this article, one analyst saying the market's going to fall apart because QE is ending. It has ended, and the market is going to be much more volatile and go down for the end of the year. Another one saying, it's going to go up for another 5-10% by the end of the year. No one really knows. But I want to give you these four reasons why it could rally to the end of the year. Those are what we're going to talk about. Of course, first on the list is always you. What do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? So give me a call. The market today, the Dow was down 31, the NASDAQ down 15, and the S&P down 3. And that doesn't really tell the whole story because the market was down after the Fed announced that it's cutting out QE, which kind of everybody expected. So I'm not sure why the market negatively reacted to that. It was totally expected. The market started to fall. You know, it was already, it was up for the day, but it started to give back that all throughout the day slowly and then fell sharply after the announcement. And then came back toward the end of the day. You know, last, I don't know, half hour, 40 minutes, came back. It was falling. So it wasn't a bad day for a Fed announcement. Earnings have been coming out and looking pretty good. So not all earnings are in for the quarter, but the growth has been about 8%. That's much better than last quarter, which was about 4%. the growth of earnings about 8%. And that's in light of a very weak Europe and a China that's pretty weak too. So the U.S. economy, and this is one of the reasons why the U.S. dollar has been very strong, and it got stronger after today. Cutting the QE made the dollar get stronger today. You understand why that would happen? Because the government is no longer going to be buying bonds or mortgages out there. And so they're no longer putting pressure in a downward on interest rates as much as they were. And if you look at Europe, they're falling into recession. So if the Federal Reserve thinks our economy is strong enough to handle no more QE, that means that our economy looks much more attractive, so our dollar looks more attractive. Dollar rallied today. Now let's get you involved in the program. Do you have a question about mutual funds? How do you examine the fee structure of a fund? You can check in now by phone, 888-99-CHART, or follow us on Twitter and send a message to us via Twitter right now at Invest Talk with two T's. You can get your questions to me the same way on our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Now more free advice from the archives. The four most dangerous words in investing are, "This time it's different," Sir John Templeton. Now we continue with Invest Talk, and again, portfolio manager Steve Peasley.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So when you're looking at your portfolio and you're trying to figure out, you're trying to figure out how to be tax efficient, you have to look at all your assets. In other words, you might have a taxable account. You may have a Roth account. You may have a regular account. You may have a 401k. A Roth 401k, a regular 401k. And what you could do is you look at each one of these differently when you think about taxes and say, for instance, you may want to, in your taxable accounts, take more of a buy and hold attitude. Put in your core holdings in there and leave them alone. But it may be in your Roth or your 401k, your 401k, if you can manage it, you can be more active because there's no tax consequences if you take profits. So that's what we're talking about, being a bit more tax efficient. You know, you don't need to put tax efficient holdings in an IRA or Roth. In other words, why buy municipal bonds that are not taxed and put them in a retirement account if you have another taxable account? Because municipal bonds, if you live in California or whatever state you're in, are double tax free. You don't have to pay in state or federal. And so why are you using your assets to buy something that's double tax free and something that's already tax free and that's your IRA or Roth IRA? I want you to give it thought on some of the tax implications of what's happening. Okay? That's all I'm suggesting. Just think about what you can do to be more tax efficient. It's not rocket science. It's not like you have to, really work on it. No, just think about it. Wills, trusts, life insurance, 529, and Coverdell College Savings Plans, IRA, 401k, brokerage accounts, annuities. Just some of the topics to be tackled on our Wealth Workshop webinar coming up November 12th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. And you can register now at investtalk.com. And it's free. Free.
Coming up on the next Invest Talk, these are said to be a possible way to get just the right exposure to the stock and bond markets, the Goldilocks investment that few even know about. That's our talking point for Thursday, October 30th. We hope you can listen to that podcast. And remember, you can join in the discussion live between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Just call 888-99-CHART. Consider that an invitation.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Would you like to improve your 401k at work? Well, you can't do it alone. Go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin. On the message, just write 401k. You'll get some useful information in return. This is Invest Talk, and you're welcome to call 888-99-CHART and talk to Steve right now.
And remember, you drive the discussion, or with your questions or your comments. We want to help fill in the blanks, but you drive it. You can reach us anytime a question pops in your head. 888-99-CHART, and this is how you do it.
Hi, this is Rob. I listen to you on Stitcher Radio. You have a great show, and I appreciate everything you do to help people out. My interest was in the symbol KO for Coca-Cola. I was wondering what you think about it at these levels. I'll listen on the show. Thanks. Bye.
Of course, Coca-Cola is the big blue-chip company. It's going to be around, has been around forever, going to be around forever. It's going to be around for a long time. And they are pretty much flat as far as growth rates. And earnings is going to go up 2% next year. Well, that's to be expected from a $180 billion company that is a worldwide company. So what you do, you want to buy this stock when the dividend is really good. And that means when the price is down. And the dividend right now is 3%. Not too bad. Not too bad. Because the price is down. Now, the price got as high as almost $45. $45, and that was a month ago. Today is at 40. And right at the 200-day moving average. And this is the area you kind of think about picking it up. It has been as low as $37 a couple times this year, within the last 12 months. So it could go lower. But this is the 200-day moving average. It's trying to find support right there. And, it's fallen sharply, probably on disappointing earnings a little bit when they came out. Okay, But remember, you're going to buy this because of the 3% dividend yield. It's still, from a fundamental point of view, it's not cheap. It's still not cheap. I mean, when you're looking at $2.11 and it's a $40 stock, you're close to a 20 PE. Okay, that's 20% higher than the average for the S&P 500. Though, I don't see it being cheap, but it has fallen to a point where it should find support, and it would be a buy point if it holds here. And it looks like it's trying awfully hard to hold here. So that's Coke, KO. It's a blue chip core holding. You buy it, you hold it forever. What's interesting is their growth area is not sodas. That area is kind of falling a little bit, shrinking a little bit. The growth area is water and, energy drinks. That's where the growth is for them. Now, let's answer a question from our Twitter account. Karen, it's at Invest Talk with two T's. Love your show. What do you think of NRZ? NRZ, is recent reverse split good or bad? Do you know what a reverse split is? Okay. A normal stock split and a reverse split is neither good nor bad in and of itself, except. There's always the except. When you have a normal stock split, like Apple had with 7-for-1, so if you had one stock, they reduce the stock price to a level and then give you 7 more stocks. But the price, the value, it stayed exactly the same from one day to the next. Same thing with a reverse split. That they give you 10 stocks. They take your one stock, take your 10 stocks and give you one and drop it down by a factor of 10, the price. Well, I'm sorry, drop it down. They push it up the factor of 10 because it's too low price. And the reason why they would do that is because they're trying to boost the stock price because it got too low. So a reverse split is usually deemed negative. Something's wrong. The stock price has really been going down. They need to get the stock price up. Why do they need to do that? Well, it's just new residential invest. This NRZ is on the New York Stock Exchange, and the New York Stock Exchange has a price. You have to have a minimum price of $5 a share. So they did a 1-for-2 split, and now their price is $12.20. So it was a little bit above $5 before. And so they needed to do that reverse split because there's requirements on New York Stock Exchange to get your price above $5. In the NASDAQ, it's above $2. Now, you're going to go out there and find stocks that are selling under $5 and on the New York Exchange and under $2 on the NASDAQ. You're going to find them. They're out there. But every one of these companies are being notified by the index. You have to get it up. You know, please do that. Remember, they don't want to kick them off. They really don't want to kick them off to the pink sheets, off the index, because they like all the stocks to be traded. That's where they make their money, on traded on their platforms, on their exchange. So they give them lots of time to get the stock up. One of the ways is to do a reverse split because it was down too low. It's one of the ways they do that. NRZ, New Zealand Residents. It's a REIT investing in residential real estate related investments. And they did a reverse split. Not sure why. It's a very small company, $1.7 billion. Not tiny, tiny. Not a micro, but small. But their sales are doing well. Has a high yield, dividend yield of 5.7%. Hasn't been around long enough. Not sure why they needed to do a reverse split. Kind of interesting. They issued more stocks just in June of this year. So here you are issuing more stocks, which would tend to drive the stock price down. And then you do a reverse split. So you take those stocks out of the float because you reverse split it. Something's not right there. I'd like to know why they decided that. Our next day for portfolio reviews in San Ramon, is November 19th. Remember, you don't need an account with KPP Financial. You just have an interest in a professional second opinion. That would be me. And there's certainly no obligation of any kind. Just go to investtalk.com and then click on make an appointment. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
Listening to Invest Talk, and we're listening to you.
Can I benefit from a Roth? Would that lessen my taxes in the future? And what kind of investments can I put into a Roth?
The question I had was about a mutual fund versus the exchange traded fund. What exactly is the difference between those?
Get your questions to us now at 888-99-CHART. And that's how you can reach Invest Talk anytime.
So I was reading, as I always do every day. I read a lot. I'm kind of one of the kinds of people that reads constantly because I like it. I was reading in the Financial Times today. There was an article, I don't know what page, and kind of a small article. China consumption data hides sharp slowdown, says analysts. And so I thought that piqued a little interest because I know China's having trouble. And they're trying to become more consumer-driven, right? Not export-driven, but more consumer-driven. So we would want to see what the consumer is doing. And remember, they're having the housing problem there. The prices have fallen, and there's been some couple of bankruptcies by some builders. So, you know, I'm thinking, well, does that mean that the consumer is having trouble making money, spending money? What's going on? So China's National Bureau of Statistics says retail sales grew 12% in the first 9 months of this year, 12%. That was modestly down from 13% last year, okay, 12%. Now, then you go to the 100 largest retail enterprises in China. And these guys are companies like Colgate-Palmolive, Nestle's, and Unilever, selling just basic stuff and food, right? The 100 largest retailers say that so far this year, 2014, remember China says it's 12% growth, they average growth of those 100 largest companies is 0.1%, down from 10.1% a year ago. I'm saying up 0.1%. Remember last year they were up 10.1%. This year, they're up 0.1%. China's saying, no. Consumers' retail sales grew 12%. Now, how can you say, well, maybe these 100 largest companies don't represent a big enough swath? Okay, so maybe the smaller guys, the smaller companies, maybe they're having better growth than, say, the larger guys. Now, how much do you believe that? Do you really believe that? Now, so what I'm saying is, whatever statistics come out of China officially, you have to take it all with a grain of salt. They may be counting things that we know consumer doesn't, we don't count, and maybe they're counting sales by purchases by the government. See, they can cheat that way. Well, we're talking about, you know, not just individual people consumers, but we're talking about consumers, government agencies, and so on and so forth. Remember, it's a communist country. They can do whatever they want. They can change the formula any way they want. Now, consumption last year accounted for just shy of about half of China's economy, economic output last year. Household consumption, about 36%. So the difference there has to be something other than household consumption, from 36% to 50. So it's very difficult to know, where the other consumption come from. You see, the thing that fascinated me the most was how big a difference it was. These big hundred companies, these are big companies, you would think that they would represent a good portion or a good representation of the overall consumer consumption in China. I mean, every one of these companies is in every one of the large cities, I guarantee that. Interesting. So China may be in worse shape than we'll ever find out, because they can hide it. You can hide a lot of ills when you have a big balance sheet, and you can sweep a lot of stuff under the carpet. It's very easy. Now let's get back to the phones. Your call comes first. Any money questions are welcome. 888-99-CHART. Here's a call from Kenny in San Diego, who listens to us streaming live on investtalk.com.
Love your show and always learn tons. And I was looking at Raytheon and looking at a buy point, or looking for a buy point. I don't own it, but would like to. And where's the buy point to get into Raytheon? And be interested in what your take is on the fundamentals and the chart. So thanks a lot, and we'll listen on the internet. Bye.
Raytheon Corporation, Raytheon Company, manufactures guidance systems, laser missile systems, integrated defense platforms, and command control systems. Okay, defense. Received a $19 million contract from U.S. Air Force to build new radar that will detect drones, aircraft. $19 million is peanuts to them. It's a $31 billion company. So $19 million. They do $5.4 billion in a quarter. So $19 million is nothing. It is a very, its earnings is growing very slowly, 8% this year, but 2% next. Sales have been shrinking 5 to 9% quarter after quarter after quarter for well over a year. And, of course, you know, you had government cutting back spending. Remember that a year or two ago when the Democrats and Republicans agreed to, cuts in across the board? Remember that? Well, Raytheon's, of course, military spending got caught in that, of course. It pays a 2.4% dividend, and he's looking for a buy point. A really good buy point is when it's bounced off the 200-day moving average the last two or three times since July. Excuse me. The most recent is that almost 10% correction we had in the S&P. Well, this fell right to the 200-day moving average, which was like $94, and today it's $101. So you either want to wait for a break down back to the 200-day moving average, or you wait till it breaks out above about 104, 103.50. When it breaks up, remember it's 101.66 today, because that means it'll be a new 52-week high. Personally, I would rather see a pullback, because this stock is not growing. So, you know, what is $7.05 worth? I mean, I think it's worth what? No more than a market PE of 15. And if that's the case, it's worth about where it is. Right? So there's not a lot of upside potential unless they turn around that growth. So I'm not keen on Raytheon myself. But there's your buy points. Now, 1 year ago, it was at $74. So it tells you, you know, it's done pretty good in the last 12 months. But all that, you know, I would not be a chaser of this right now. I would not. Now, let's go to Invest Talk 101. We do this every so often, as you know. Now, should you be buying junk bonds? If they're having a sale on junk bonds, should you be buying them? Okay, here's our quiz. How about a quiz? Multiple choice. Which of the following best defines a junk bond? What is a junk bond? No one knows. Yeah, they heard the term, but they really don't know what it is. Okay, A, is a junk bond is one that is rated below investment grade by rating agencies? Is it a bond that has declined dramatically in value? A bond that has been defaulted, and therefore it's junk? A bond that is not regulated? Okay? Now, junk also means high yield. When you hear junk, think of high yield bonds. Is what they intertwine those two names. Oh, it's a junk bond, or it's a high yield bond. Now they are issued by companies that register low credit scores. So it's a low credit score. This means that compared to the better rated investment grade bonds, the risk is greater that these companies will default on their interest payments. So the answer is number one: a bond that is rated below investment grade by rating agencies. There's even a chance that they could go bankrupt. Junk bonds in recessions, companies that issue junk bonds in recessions have a very high default rate. When the economies are expanding, it has a very low default rate. And what happens is recently with all the Federal Reserve involvement in the markets, but bond market, that has driven down the yield on junk bonds to a level that you're not getting nearly enough yield for the risk you're taking. And no one really is paying attention to that. And late last month, junk bonds really took a hit on value. You can even say the last couple of months has been very, very volatile. Junk bonds have been very, very volatile. So investors are starting to get a little bit nervous about junk bonds. And that's InvestTalk 101. Is there a topic you want to know more about? Well, you can get in touch with me. We're here right now at 888-99-CHART. Or you can write me a note. Click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
InvestTalk insiders receive weekly articles from Steve on useful topics, stuff you can use. And they get access to a whole library of webinars. Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Justin and Steve. This is Gary from Massachusetts. I listen to your show by podcast. Great show, guys. My question today is about Costco. I'm up about 20% on it, and I'd like to know at this valuation, would you hold on to it or sell it and not be greedy? Thank you. Bye.
Costco, everybody, and if you don't know who Costco is, you don't live in the United States, okay? Operates in 646 wholesale membership warehouses in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, U.K., Mexico, Australia, and Japan. You may not be close to a Costco, but you should be. They're a really good store, one of the better retailers out there. They're growing about between anywhere from 7 to 11%, both their sales and earnings. Very consistent. This consistency means the stock price has really taken off. I mean, we're talking in May, they were about $111, $110, $11. And today they're $131, spiking up. What I would do, and this is much higher than it was, you know, it took that market pullback of 10% in stride. It came down a little bit, but not nearly much. So what you want to do is you want to follow this up with a tight stop. Maybe a 50-day moving average would be good if it breaks below it. Or if you want to be even tighter, you can do a 20-day moving average, and that's $128, or 50-day, about $125. I'd probably give it a little bit more room. This is the kind of stock that you want to kind of hold on to because it's consistently growing. And a lot of times improve their numbers in recessions. Don't think that because of recession that they're going to collapse. But they will go down. It's just not that, you know, that just, to me, would offer a big buying opportunity for Costco. COST is the symbol, Costco. I like the stock. So don't follow up with a tight stop because you got 25% profit in. Don't let it fall. But it's marching up still. So I don't want you to also to I don't want you to cut the flowers and hold the bad ones or the weeds in your portfolio. You know, you have a portfolio and the flowers are growing nicely and you're cutting them off. You want them to let them continue to grow. Many people cut the flowers and water the weeds. Keep the weeds because they haven't done well, but I'll just wait till they do. It's not a good way to do it. Let's go to Harish in Santa Clara. How you doing, Harish?
Oh, hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I have a question about the Seedrill, and these are the oil rigging companies.
Uh-huh.
I'm interested in buying them. They look to be at a cheaper price. So I have I'm actually contemplating between RIG, I believe it's Transocean, versus Seedrill.
Okay. Transocean Rig, it's almost $11 billion company, and its stock price has really been beaten up. And because of that, they pay a 10% dividend now. The P.E. ratio is 6. It's hard for me to believe that they'll go much lower, but, you know, oil prices, remember, any company that's a driller are subject to oil prices. Major oil companies will stop or slow their drilling budget, like ExxonMobil, Chevron. They slow down their drilling when oil prices get too low because the cost of the oil to get it out of the ground starts to reach the cost, the price of the barrel of oil. So why drill more if you're just going to not make money? So, and of course, who gets hurt when that scenario happens, when oil goes down? The drillers are the first one in line to get hurt. And that's what happened. Rig has gone from 64 down to 29. I mean, it's hard to look at it and say, how can this not be a good place to buy? Because it's so cheap. But based on next year's earnings, 29 is like a 10, 11 PE, which is still cheap. So, yeah, this could be the place to pick it up, but I'd wait till it broke up from this low. I'd wait till it breaks up to maybe $31 or so. If it breaks above that, then you might buy it. That's for Transocean. That's what I would do. We owned this at one time, and it kept falling, and we got out. We let it fall too much, and it just kept falling after we got out, too. So it looks like this might be support. Okay, Harish? Right in this area.
Thanks for that. And quick question on that. I mean, can you compare it against the Seadrill, which is a competitor for that?
Seadrill.
I'm trying to, compare it to pick between these two.
Seadrill has also done the same thing. I mean, both of them have been hurt tremendously. And both of them are trying to find support. Seadrill is actually cheaper on an earnings basis, but it's also a much smaller, $10 billion company, still a big company. Both of them are going to be subject to the same oil prices, but Seadrill probably looks a little bit better. Seadrill.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
We have just a few more minutes, but there's a line open for you if you want to get in right now. 888-99-CHART. Do you have a question about one of our topics or a call that we've answered already and you want clarification? 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you. You say you're a conservative investor. You look for funds designed for staying power, bonds. You're big on bonds. But what if your portfolio isn't really that conservative anymore? Why not use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com? Ask Steve about it. You can reach him now at 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's go to Sal in Livermore. How are you doing, Sal?
Hey, doing good. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
I have a question. I have some cash that I'm keeping for emergencies.
Okay.
I lose my job or something. So I don't want to sit in savings. Thinking of something like Vanguard or maybe mutual funds. What do you suggest? That would be a good.
Well, remember, if you put it in a Vanguard mutual fund, that's, you know, depending on which mutual fund, it could be pretty risky. And if this is a kind of emergency money or money you don't really want to risk, I wouldn't put it in a mutual fund. You know, even though you're not making any money on CDs or money markets, you just, if it's called emergency funds for you, and which I always say you need between 3 and 6 months worth of your expenses in liquid cash, don't expose that kind of money to the market. Don't. Because it, market could slap you upside the head, you know, and lose 20%. And, you know, you don't want to do that. So be very careful, Sal, what you do with that money.
So you keep it in a savings account, is that what you recommend?
Well, if that's the emergency fund, yeah, I would keep it very, very liquid. Yeah, even though I know it doesn't make anything, I know that. But that's the purpose is for safety for you, you know. So.
Okay. So thanks. What about extra funds? If you want to use mutual funds, what do you recommend?
Then you could probably, if you're just going to, you know, you want to probably starting off, you buy Vanguard S&P 500 Index. Vanguard is one of the cheapest. They charge the least amount of all the mutual funds for their mutual funds. You can very easily do that. You can also buy SPY, which is, you can open up a, you know, Scott Trade or E-Trade and buy SPY, which is also the S&P 500. Yeah, so, and that's also cheap. That's what I would start with, Sal. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Dennis in San Jose. How you doing, Dennis?
Hey, Sal. Yeah, I had a quick question. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Okay.
I owe my employer 98. I owe my employer 98.3.
Yeah.
And my employer says I can pay it back all at once right now, or it'll take $695 a month out of my retirement check the rest of my life.
Are you married?
Yeah, I'm 70. I'm married, 71 years old, okay. Still working full time.
Oh.
And I just wanted to get your take on that.
Well, I just did one of these yesterday about the lump sum or getting in, I don't remember what it was, like $157. It was a small one, okay? And what would be better? And they gave him 9 choices of an annuity. You could take the lump sum or you can take 9 choices. And the first choice is you get whatever you just said, so much a month, right? How much a month. But what if you died tomorrow? Well, would your wife get any of that going forward? Or would it stop the day you die? See,
no, they said I can pay them back the 98.3 right now, cash out of my own fund, or accept a $695 payment out of my retirement check the rest of my life.
You know, I have to look at the numbers and do the math for you and determine which one's better. I've done many of these things, and most of the time, what's better is to take the lump sum and then go invest that somewhere. But I don't know that unless I look at it. You're 71. Your life expectancy is probably in your 90, 91, something in there like that. And
85.
Is your wife much younger than you or older than you? Or
same age.
Same age. So she's probably going to outlive you by a few years. And my biggest concern is, well, if you die, that means your wife gets nothing. You know, so some of those plans say the wife will get half. Some say, but then you get less than 900 and something. You get like 700 and something, you know. But she'll get half that when you die. So do they give you any of those options, Dennis?
No. They said give us a 98.3. If you die, it's too bad. You lose it all. But
see,
if you don't give the money up front, then we'll take $695 a month on your retirement check the rest of your life.
I don't know. I don't like the deal. From the sound of it, without going through the mail, I mean, go through the math, I don't really care for that. Because, you know, maybe if you were 65, I might like it a lot better. Okay. Chris, call back tomorrow about GDX. We'll be happy to talk about it. Thanks, Dennis. Before we close for the hour, one of our most comprehensive webinars ever is coming up on November 12th, 6:30 Pacific time. It's an A to Z retirement planning guide. Sign up for free on investtalk.com. Hopefully we can go to A to Z. We have to, you know, 1 hour. It's free. Free. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley on behalf of Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial. We thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.